So you grew up as a graffiti artist.
Yeah.
Painting on abandoned lots in Philadelphia. How important is that work to what you do today?
It's really important because one of the things is sometimes graffiti is glorified as this thing like, you know, resisting, or like sometimes we see graffiti come in the form of murals, like with the guy Obey does. What's his name? It's not coming to me. And so when I was doing graffiti, it was kind of like I would have to like kick some needles to the side and
syringes.
Yeah,
you know,
syringes.
Because you were doing graffiti in empty lots where prostitutes and drug deals were happening.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's not like a pleasant memory for me. It was sort of like just a necessity. And there's all these moments in my visual arts experience where I've had to like overcome something. Like 3 months before I graduated here, I did an art sale in Pittsburgh, and I made $60 after 3 days. And then on the way home, my wife lost the $60. So we were trying to figure out how to like get home, and we're like sitting there bartering to like sell pottery so we can have some gas money. And so that experience of like, you know, having to be resilient in the face of all those things, you know, makes you really resourceful. And then you start trading art, and you start, you know, saying, well, somebody's got to want a handmade mug, and somebody hears my story, they'll want to buy it. And
selling your art is not a problem today.
It's not a problem today, no. Like, I do cup sales, and I try to make my some of my pottery really affordable for people. So I put a limit on my cups, like how much I sell them for. But we usually sell them, like if I do a sale for 50 cups, I'll usually sell them within a half hour online. And, you know, my gallery does a really good job of selling my artwork. And so it all works out in the end. But these experiences of having to be resilient make me appreciate where I am today, and then also make me really determined to provide those opportunities for others.
And in fact, you're doing that. You started a scholarship program so that other young people of color can have an art school experience like you did.
Right. And so I have a scholarship called the Roberto Lugo Scholarship Fund, and it's to send people to take summer workshops at Haystack Mountain School of Crafts.
In Maine,
in Deer Isle, Maine. And so it's just an entire experience. One of the things with Haystack is that they really get some of the best artists to teach workshops there. And it's really like an intensive, you know, a moment where people just work on their artwork for 2 weeks straight. And that's really influential because most people don't have that without interruption.
You know, your personal story is really one of overcoming adversity and racism, and in some cases just sheer bad luck. And I'm wondering how critical you think those painful experiences are, because you are such a passionate person and you feel things so deeply. I'm wondering how important it has been to you in your success as an artist.
Yeah, I think it's really central. One of my professors, and I won't say which because it sounds like a negative thing, but it was actually a really positive thing that she said. She said, "You're really lucky to have had these experiences," and it doesn't feel the same. It didn't feel that way at the time,
no.
And it doesn't feel that way looking back. But I think what she meant was you have a purpose in this life, and most people don't have the same type of purpose. And yours is one that is broad and relates to so many different people. And so, I feel like with this sort of background, and how few people get to the point where I am at, where I'm an artist and my job is to communicate why these experiences are important, I have the job of representing a large sect of culture that doesn't have a voice. And what better way to do that than with art?
You know, and it would seem to me that there's probably some cathartic aspect. Every time you make a piece, you've worked something out. For instance, that teapot that had the Confederate flag on it, for example.
Yeah, certainly art has been a therapy for me, and I get to, in some ways, control where that goes. And there's certainly an amount of bliss. One of my professors, Chris Daly, who teaches here at Penn State, really instituted this idea of like figuring out how to find one's bliss. And that's so important because some of the things that I make work about are so painful that it's hard to enjoy myself while making them. But if I offset those with moments where I'm really enjoying what I'm doing and I find bliss in it, then it really makes it all the worthwhile.
Can you tell us a little bit about your studio and the work, you know, your work discipline? I'm kind of curious to know how much time you spend, where you get your ideas, and what a typical workday for a ceramicist is.
So I'm really blessed. I have an assistant named Amanda Schneider, and she was a woman I met at a lecture several years ago in Kansas, and she asked me if she can come out and work for me. And so through that process, I've been able to make a lot more work and do things that I normally wouldn't be able to. And so we work on several projects at a time. Being an artist has also helped me to become a better business person. Like, now I have overhead. I have to pay a human being and be responsible for their income.
You're an employer.
Yeah, I'm an employer, and then I have a studio, so I have all this overhead. And so I need things that I know that I can sort of be able to make an income from. And so we make a certain amount of cups every month. And so she helps me with those. And eventually she's gotten so good at it that I've given her a share of what I make off of it. And then that allows me to work on much bigger projects. And so over the last year, we've been painting these plates. They're really detailed plates. And we didn't know what we were painting them for. And I said, well, something's going to happen. And we were watching this talk, this back and forth between Donald Trump and Hillary, and they asked him about, you know, what did he feel about stop and frisk, and he just kept saying law and order. And so I had just enough plates to spell out the word law and do it in a certain order. And so I have this, like, law and order sort of plate set that I'm displaying on a wall as a mural, and it has all these images of women of color that have sort of, like, helped to create, you know, sort of the movement that's gotten me to the place where I am today. And so I'll work on several things simultaneously. Some are larger projects that take several months, and some are things like the cups are sort of a therapy for me. They allow me to work quickly and feel like I'm checking things off. And I'm doing a bit of writing, and what's really great about my writing is something I've always felt insecure about. But the way that I've taken away that insecurity is by writing and not letting anybody else read it. It's just writing for me. And so there's no rules. I don't have to worry about commas or periods. I can just write. And then when I do feel like sharing something, I can. And then the last thing I'm doing is I'm working on some videos, because I find that so many people that are not involved in clay really relate to sort of visual stimulus and working in the same way that like a music video would. And so that's where that piece Ghetto's Resourceful comes from. Planning it in stages and then executing it.
And it really highlights, you know, this spoken word poet aspect of what you do, where you're incorporating rap and these really catchy lyrics that obviously illustrate you are a good writer.
Yeah, and that came from when I was in school here. Chris Daly had us write a biography, and I wrote it, and I was really ashamed of it, and then I said it in class, and then he walked up and he said, you know, you're a really good writer. And I said, what? What did you just say to me? I'm a good writer. And then he's like, yeah, you just, you know, you're writing about your life. You do it so well. And so that really started to be on this trend of being able to do this. And really it comes from the same experience of graffiti, whereas we didn't have music classes. So at lunchtime, someone would drum on a table and then we'd rap over it and we had this back and forth. So that experience of having to figure out how to rhyme things and do it in a certain pace really allows me to sort of do what I do now.
You know, but really that story illustrates the importance of positive reinforcement. And we assume everyone gets it, and that's a faulty assumption.
Yeah, definitely. I think... I don't know. I feel like everyone is sort of somehow aware of their faults. And then sometimes others, when they're trying to be helpful, can just highlight those faults without sort of also letting you know where you're working towards. It's almost like where the communities that I've surrounded myself are, you know, directed in terms of education. They consider education as like helping you to fix something that's wrong or something that you don't know, whereas like I think education also comes in the form of like letting you know and supporting you in the areas that what you're doing is working and where you are excelling at. And so a lot of times people forget the second part because they just assume that someone knows that they're good at something, but you got to tell them, you know.
And someone telling you was certainly important. It really set you on this path.
Definitely, because I until I went to school, I really didn't receive any sort of positive reinforcement for most of my life. It was people in Philly can be really direct, and people in where I come from, you know, can be really sort of negative. And so when you get to the point where you start doing someone says, hey, that's pretty good, you're like, I'm going to do more of this now, you know, when you start to get that positivity.
You know, that sort of brings me to the educational philosopher Maxine Green, who said, art can't change the world, but it can change someone who can. Yeah. That speaks to you.
Yep. I love Maxine Green. I took this curriculum theory class here, and there were so many writers, and I couldn't wrap my mind around their words and how they were saying things. And then they gave us one writing by Maxine Green, and I was like, I get what she's saying. I know what she's saying. So, and most of it was because she was criticizing the system. So I really empathize with that.
All right. On that note, we are out of time again. Thank you so much. Appreciate your talking with us.
Yeah. Really excited to be here and thankful. Thank you.